You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 18th of January, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today we're going to continue with this news story about the Islamic terrorist that held four hostages to ransom in a Texas synagogue. And yesterday we went into the actual hostage taking, and we had a look at the response from the Blackburn Muslim community. And today we're going to take a look at the female Al-Qaeda operative that Faisal Akram wanted to get released from prison, because her story is very interesting as well. I mean, the real point of yesterday's story was that this is the result of multiculturalism. If you have different cultures, different ethnicities, different religions living within one territory, you're going to get friction from that. And if you have one group there that has extremists in it that believe that the way to achieve their aims is through violence, you're going to have a rise in violence. And if you look at France, that has the most incidence of Islamic terrorism in Europe, and it has the most Muslims. If you look at Iceland, for instance, Iceland probably has the least number of Islamic terrorist incidents, and that's because it has the least number of Muslims. Japan hasn't had any Islamic terrorism because it has no Muslims. Of course, not all Muslims are terrorists, but there is a certain portion of them that follow this extremist version of Islam. And that is why this was able to take place in Texas over the weekend, is because America has multiculturalism, Britain has multiculturalism, Britain has good relations with America, and to turn away a British citizen from America would probably cause a diplomatic incident. So it was very, very embarrassing for Britain to have a British citizen carrying this out over the weekend. But as I say, today I want to concentrate on this Lady Al-Qaeda who Malik Faisal Akram wanted to get released. FBI Special Agent Matthew DeSano told reporters in Colleyville after the standoff that the investigation would have global reach. He said the suspect Malik Faisal Akram's demands were focused on one issue that was not specifically threatening to the Jewish community. And I think he just involved the Jewish community because he had something against them, probably because of the Israel-Palestine problems, because apparently he did make some anti-Israel comments while he was holding the hostages. Afia Siddiqui, known as Lady Al-Qaeda, now 49, was jailed for 86 years after being arrested in Afghanistan in 2008 for the attempted murder of a US Army captain. Now, that's bizarre, isn't it? You don't often hear of female terrorists, but we do get them, and we do get them in amongst the Islamic community. There have been quite a few, actually, in Britain, and we have women that went out to support ISIS in Syria. They went out there to marry the ISIS soldiers and to offer them support and succor, even though they were effectively fighting against the British. And when they first went out there, of course, Britain was actually supporting them. Apparently, in the mosques, they were offering money for people to go out there and fight against Bashar al-Assad, because what they wanted was to take out Assad. But of course, then you also got problems in Iraq, where there were American soldiers. So we now prosecute these people. I mean, I can imagine that they think that it's a little bit hypocritical to be supporting the takedown of Bashar al-Assad and yet then to be against the people that were doing it. And of course, the people that were doing it were Islamic extremists, and there was lots of beheadings and all sorts of awful things that went on in Syria. We don't know what this lady al-Qaeda was particularly involved in, but we do know that she attempted to murder a US Army captain. The Pakistani-born neuroscientist, that's right, she's a neuroscientist, was found with 2 kilos of poison sodium cyanide and plans for chemical attacks on New York's Brooklyn Bridge and the Empire State Building. And of course, the narrative that we get told is that these terrorists, they don't really understand Islam. They're not particularly bright people. And yet here we have a neuroscientist that had decided to take up terrorism. So it's not that these people don't have much intelligence. It's not that they are not understanding what the Quran tells them, because if you're a neuroscientist, you're obviously going to have the intelligence to understand what your religion is actually telling you. And yet this neuroscientist believed that what her religion was telling her is that she should use violence, she should wage jihad in the name of Islam. And it's not like she hadn't actually seen what America was like. It's not like she hadn't seen the benefits of liberal progressivism and what a free democracy is like. She'd actually been in America for quite some time, and it was being in America that really radicalized her. She was handed to the Americans and convicted of attempted murder 2 years later in a US court. Her attorney, Marwa Elbialy, told CNN that her client has no involvement in the hostage situation. She does not want any violence perpetrated against any human being, especially in her name, Elbialy said. Well, that's a bit strange, isn't it, considering she was caught with 2 kilos of cyanide and was wanted for the attempted murder of a US Army captain and is known as Lady Al-Qaeda. Are they trying to portray her as some kind of pacifist now? The attorney said, it obviously has nothing to do with Dr. Siddiqui or her family. And that may be true. It may just be that this Malik Akram just had a bit of a fixation about her. John Floyd of the Houston branch of the Council on American Islamic Relations also confirmed Afia's family was not involved in the current hostage situation and that they condemn the suspect's actions. Are we supposed to just believe that just because this guy is part of the Council on American Islamic Relations? He says it's okay. He says that Afia would not have been involved in this, so we can just ignore that. I mean, why doesn't this news report point that out, that he's obviously going to say that because he's a Muslim, and it is important for Muslims to support other Muslims and not to be seen to be condemning them. They always have to look for the positive side in this. They always have to look for the best part of somebody. And if a Muslim is to report to the authorities on another Muslim, then that is grounds for that Muslim to be censored by the Islamic community. That's why we don't very often hear condemnation of these attackers. In the same way that yesterday we heard that the Blackburn Muslim community, they didn't condemn the actions of this Malik who held all these hostages. In contrast to that, they actually asked for God to give him the highest rank in heaven, because it's against Sharia law for them to condemn other Muslims. This John Floyd said, we want the hostage taker to know that Dr. Afia Siddiqui and her family strongly condemn this act and do not stand by you, Floyd wrote in a statement directed at the hostage taker. And of course, they're going to say that. They're going to say that they had nothing to do with this. He says, we want the assailant to know that his actions are wicked and directly undermine those of us who are seeking justice for Dr. Afia. Now, it may be that this Dr. Afia has actually been set up. It could be that she's been a victim of one of these stings, one of these FBI entrapment operations. But it does seem as if she has showed a lot of support for jihad and for terrorism, as you will see as we go into the story. And we do know that in Islam there is this principle of taqiyah, where it is okay to lie to non-Muslims if it is to advance the cause of Islam, and of course advance the cause of other Muslims who are a part of Islam. Afia's hatred for the US was so strong that during her interrogation after her arrest, she grabbed a rifle from one of her guards and shot at them, shouting death to Americans. So that doesn't sound very pacifist-like to me, for her to be condemning all violence if she thinks it's okay to shoot Americans. She came to the US in 1991 and won a partial scholarship to MIT, where she was a biology major. So America's been really nice to this girl. They paid for her to study at one of the top universities to give her an education. And instead of being grateful for that, she wants to kill Americans. She wants to blow them up with cyanide, a load of innocent people, quite indiscriminately, out of her warped version of following a religion. Siddiqui was sent by her neurosurgeon father from Pakistan to study in the US on her own, and won a partial scholarship to study at the prestigious Cambridge School. And I bet part of the reason why she was given that scholarship is because she ticked the diversity boxes, so they could say, well, look, we do not discriminate against Muslims or non-whites because we have this woman here from Pakistan. I bet they put her forward as a model student. You've also got the fact that she came from a wealthy family as well. Neurosurgeons get paid a lot of money. So she was from a wealthy family, she had a good education, and yet she still turned to Islamic terrorism. She arrived at MIT in 1991, having been living with her brother in Texas for a year, where she studied at the University of Houston and gave regular speeches on Islam. During one, she told the crowd, "The hijab is not a restriction. It allows a woman to be judged by her content, not by her packaging, by what is written on the pages, not the pretty artwork on the cover." And of course, we're being told all the time that Muslims don't want to wear their hijabs, Muslims don't want to wear their burqas, don't they all want to be liberated and freed? And the fact of the matter is that a lot of Muslim women don't want to be liberated and freed, and they like wearing their hijabs, they like wearing their burqas. There's a certain portion of white women that like wearing their COVID masks. They like it because it hides their features, so they don't get stared at by men. I mean, that's part of the reason for this. I mean, we seem to think it's great that women are uncovered a lot of the time and men are distracted by this. But in the Islamic world, they don't think this is a good thing, and the women don't want to be stared at, and they don't want their men to be distracted, and there is something to be said for that. In 1993, she wanted to do something to help our Muslim brothers and sisters, even if it meant breaking the law. And again, here we have an instance of the way within Islam they refer to everybody within it as brothers and sisters. And of course, when this Malik was doing that, when he was taking the hostages at the synagogue, it was remarked upon that this Al-Qaeda lady was not actually his sister, but she was his sister in the faith. And of course, people may say, well, it's not really Islam that he was following because he was carrying out violence. But if that was the case, then the Blackburn Muslim community would have condemned him and said that he wasn't a Muslim. They didn't. They called for him to have the highest rank in heaven. As she and some friends debated how to raise money for Muslims being killed during the Bosnian War, one of them joked that they didn't want to go on the FBI's most wanted list. It was interesting in the Bosnian War because NATO took the side of the Muslims, didn't they? Waqas Jilani, then a graduate student at Clark University, said she raised her skinny little wrists in the air and said, "I'd be proud to be on the most wanted list because it would mean I'm doing something to help our Muslim brothers and sisters." She said we should all be proud to be on that list. So she was quite open about her support for jihad. Jilani added that Siddiqui said in her speeches that Muslims should get training and go overseas and fight. He said, "We were all laughing like, uh-oh, Afia's got a gun. Part of it was because she was such a bad shot, but also because she was always mouthing off about the US and the FBI being so bad and all. So she's mouthing off about America being such a terrible place whilst being educated at MIT for free and then being a graduate student at this Clark University. She's not very grateful for getting that scholarship, is she? Siddiqui married Muhammad Amjad Khan, the son of a wealthy Pakistani family, in a ceremony carried out over the phone before he flew to Boston. And again, this is another part of the Islamic culture. You can just get married by saying a few words, and again, you can just get divorced just by saying a few words. Of course, that goes against all the rules and laws and rituals and contracts that we have in the West. And you would think that this would not go on in the West, but it does. And along with polygamy, and a lot of these Muslims have multiple wives. Again, it's why they have so many children. It's why they have such a high fertility, and they are replacing our own people in our own countries at such a fast rate. And there's also these complaints about the way that their women are treated in our countries. And of course, the way that they're treated is really an issue for their community to deal with and their culture to deal with. But once we try to westernize them and get them to see themselves as being British or being American, then they don't like the way that they're being treated. But at the same time, they still want all the good things that they have from their community, but they don't like the fact that they can just be divorced by their husband divorcing them, and that they don't get any compensation for that from the husband. So we do have these issues, these differences of ways of doing things between the different cultures that again cause problems with multiculturalism. These ceremonies that can just be carried out over the phone, or divorces that can just be carried out by saying a few words, they cause all sorts of issues in Western countries. Upon arrival, he discovered that far from being the quiet religious woman he had been promised, her life was very different. And again, so this was an arranged marriage. This is a neuroscientist that had been set up with an arranged marriage. Another thing that goes against what we actually have in the West. He said, I discovered that the well-being of our nascent family unit was not her prime goal in life. Instead, it was to gain prominence in Muslim circles. So he thought she was going to be a quiet religious woman, but in actual fact, she was going to be a religious extremist. And again, she hasn't been condemned by the Muslim world, told that she is no longer a Muslim. She's just been told that she's an extremist, and the Muslim world are actually trying to help her out, as we saw with this representative, this fellow that was called John, that was talking about trying to get her out earlier in this article. Khan described to the Boston Globe how she regularly watched videos of Osama bin Laden, spent weekends at terror training camps in New Hampshire with activists from Al-Kifa, and begged him to quit his medical job so that he could join her. So why weren't people told about this? Why did he not warn the authorities that his wife was spending weekends at terror training camps in New Hampshire? It's not like she's doing this in Pakistan. She was doing this in America. How did these terror training camps, how were they able to continue? Why did this Khan, who is, again, he's another medical consultant, why did he not report her to the authorities at the time? Again, it's because he has this loyalty to Islam. In the end, he stopped bringing work colleagues home because she would only talk to them about converting to Islam. So he's got a lot of friends that are non-Muslim. He's got this wife that's going out to these terror training camps, and he doesn't think to warn the authorities. Khan said, invariably this would lead to unpleasantness, so I decided to keep my work separate. So his answer to this is just to stop inviting his friends around, basically. By now, all her focus had shifted to jihad against America. Instead of preaching to Americans so that they will all become Muslims and America becomes a Muslim land. So he well knew what was going on here and what she was hoping to do, what she was trying to do, and yet nothing was done about it. The breaking point was the September the 11th, 2001 attacks, after which Siddiqui, who was by now dressing all in black, insisted they return to Pakistan and get a divorce. So it was the wife that was asking to divorce him because he was not extremist enough for her. American officials suspect that she then remarried Ammar al-Baluchi, the nephew of 9/11 architect Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, although her family deny this. Siddiqui and her children disappeared in Karachi, Pakistan in 2003, shortly after Mohammed was arrested. I mean, this woman is really keen to become a jihadi, isn't she? And she wants to marry into the jihadi aristocracy there, going after this Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's nephew. The following year, she was named by FBI Director Robert Mueller as one of the seven most wanted Al-Qaeda operatives, and the only woman. And how easy would it have been to get her before she actually carried out any terrorism while she was in America, while she was going to terrorist training camps straight after getting given all this free education on a scholarship at one of the best universities in America? What happened in Pakistan before her arrest is unclear. And even during her US trial, Judge Richard Berman said he did not know what she was doing. But even now, such is her importance as a symbol of defiance to the West that Islamic State fighters publicly stated that they wanted to swap her for James Foley, the American photojournalist that they executed earlier this year. So she must have a certain infamy among these people if they were willing to swap this American hostage for her, and if this Muslim from Blackburn in Britain, if he's willing to go to America and die to try and get her released, I mean, she must be the equivalent of a sort of pin-up celebrity for Islamic extremists, I think. She is serving an 86-year sentence at the Federal Medical Center, Carswell, in Fort Worth, about 25 miles from the hostage site at the Texas Temple. So what is she doing at a medical center? Are they saying that she is insane? Has she been harmed by one of these other prisoners? Is she on a hunger strike? I mean, those are some questions that should be asked. Why is she at a medical center rather than being in a high-security prison? And the fact of the matter is, again, if it wasn't for multiculturalism, if America did not encourage people from other ethnicities and other religions to come into the country and study there, then she would not have been able to encourage people to carry out terrorism against America. She would not have been able to go to these terrorist training camps. During her trial, Afia demanded that every jury member get a DNA test to see if they were Jewish. So we can see here that there is this anti-Jewish sentiment amongst this particular strand of Islamic extremism. And obviously, this hostage taker, he was the same. That's why he went to this synagogue. So I think that's the answer of why he went to a synagogue. President Biden was questioning that yesterday and saying, well, we just don't know why he decided to take Jewish hostages to try and get this woman freed. But it's quite clear that the woman herself, she had certain concerns about Jews, we should put it that way. She said, I have a feeling everyone here is them, Jews, subject them to genetic testing. They should be excluded if you want to be fair, she told a federal judge in 2010. And of course, if you are a victim in a crime, you should not be then standing in judgment on that crime. But what we were talking about here is she was trying to attack Americans. She wasn't particularly trying to attack Jews. She tried to shoot this American soldier, and she was for calling for jihad against America. So it's not like she was being accused of actually going after Jews here. So the point that she was asking the jury to get DNA tested for that doesn't really hold up. But I do think that it's wrong if you have, say, a Jewish judge in a trial, And the trial is a hate speech or hate crime trial, and the subject of the supposed hate speech is Jews, then I do think that is wrong, because you have effectively got the alleged victim sitting in judgment on the alleged perpetrator. And that just isn't right. But I think that does go on, and I think you do end up with Jewish judges in cases like that, where it's a hate speech trial. But all of this is very interesting, just to show the way that even the most intelligent Muslims can become extremist Muslims. Even neuroscientists can carry out or prepare for terror attacks. And of course, we're told that the illegal immigrants coming into Britain, coming into America, they're the next neuroscientists and rocket scientists. And of course, it doesn't matter what they are. They could still be an Islamic extremist, no matter what profession that they actually have. And even if you do show these people what our civilization is like, and if you spend a lot of money on educating them, even then they can still go against you. They can still go against us, because blood is thicker than water, and religions are more important than anything else to a lot of people in the world. I mean, Christianity has become so watered down now, it really doesn't mean that much to a lot of people that consider themselves to be Christians. But with Muslims, they still do have a very, very strong loyalty to their religion. And they are, a lot of them are willing to die for that. They're willing to die for their religion. I wonder how many Christians would be willing to die for their religion today. Of course, that's what the apostles and the very early Christians were willing to do. They were tortured to death. And that is why Christianity took hold, because people could see that they were willing to be tortured to death. Here you have the opposite, and you have adherents of a religion that are willing to kill themselves, so long as at the same time that they kill themselves, they also kill a lot of non-Muslims at the same time. I mean, it's almost like a diabolical symmetry there. And the Muslims do actually refer to these suicide bombers as martyrs. Again, it's a diabolical symmetry to what the word actually means when it was a Christian that was tortured to death for his faith. So the solution to all of this is just to have no multiculturalism. If you had no multiculturalism, this Islamic terrorism would not be able to take place. The only way places that it would take place is actually in Muslim countries, and then it would be Muslims that were actually judging them, and that would be fair, wouldn't it? Because they'd be being judged by their own people, and then they would probably come to some kind of a solution to this. But all the while you have multiculturalism, you have different religions, different ethnicities within one territory, there is always going to be friction, and there is always going to be the chance of things like this happening. I guess all we can be thankful for is that the only person that was actually killed in this was the hostage taker. And it's certainly been an education to see the way that these people think, and certainly an eye-opener to see the Blackburn Muslim community's response to this hostage taker being killed, asking for him to be given the highest rank in heaven. I mean, I'm still taken aback by that one. Well, anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk radio for the nationalist community.